Jonathan Kaufman joins us by phone tonight. He is a line cook turned journalist who is an International Association of Culinary Professionals and James Beard Award-winning staff writer at the San Francisco Chronicle. He has served as a restaurant critic as well as contributing articles to a variety of publications. Tonight, he's going to talk with us about his book, which is titled Hippie Food. I want to start by talking about the subtitle, if you will, which is Hippie Food, How Back to the Landers, Long Hairs, and Revolutionaries Changed the Way We Eat. So since this is a historical perspective of hippie food, I thought you might just tell us when and where you see this movement beginning and kind of the early hippie foods.
Yeah, in the late 1960s, say post-1968, a lot of the baby boomers who were in the counterculture got really concerned with the diets they were eating. They were trying to create these new ways of living, and they decided that what they needed to do was strip their diet out of processed foods and go back to a simpler, healthier way of eating. So that meant whole grains, lots of vegetables. Many of them were vegetarian, at least for a while. Beans and some of these health foods that had been sort of sticking around the fringes in the United States, like wheat germ and brewer's yeast. In the beginning, the food was pretty bland, but as the 1970s progressed, they began flavoring it with all of these flavors of Asia and Eastern Europe and Central America, creating more vibrant foods.
When I think back to early days, one of the foods that comes to mind is brown rice. And we meet some interesting characters along the way in hippie foods. And George Asawa, if that's how you say his name, is certainly one. He's associated with macrobiotics. But just briefly, if you would, tell us what he meant by, quotes, eat your liquid and drink your food.
George Asawa was this very quirky Japanese guy who arrived in the United States in the 1960s teaching his diet, which was all about balancing your health as well as balancing your relationship to the universe by balancing yin and yang, which are the two forces of the universe. But he was the one who kind of identified what foods were yin and what foods were yang. And he also believed that brown rice was our principal grain because he was Japanese. And so he thought that you could eat nothing but brown rice for 10 days and cure cancer. But he also believed that you should be chewing your food so much that it became liquid in your mouth, and that was the way to best digest it.
And that included raw brown rice, yes?
A few of the early people who had no idea how to cook brown rice, or probably didn't even grow up eating much rice, thought that they could just chomp handfuls of brown rice.
You've alluded to this already, but part of the challenge with these early hippie foods was that they were mainly beige, and that not only went for their color, but the lack of flavor. So do you want to talk a little bit about the evolution of getting taste and flavor into hippie foods?
Some of the early ideas of nutrition, like macrobiotics and like the vegetarian food of the Seventh-day Adventists, didn't believe in spices. The macrobiotics didn't even like garlic. So there was this idea that it was like function over form, that we were going to eat all of these whole foods, but they have to be as simple and straightforward as possible. And I think as time went on, people got a little sick of eating that way. And a lot of baby boomers at that time were traveling because air travel had suddenly become affordable in the 1960s. So they were going to Europe, they were driving all the way to India, and the foods they were encountering came back with them to the United States, and it turned out to be the best way to make vegetarian food much more palatable.
We've talked a little bit about this, but there were cultural and philosophical things afoot in the society during these years. And as your title notes, Back to the Landers in part drove this change. And you write about Robert Guerrier. He was a journalist. He spent a couple of years visiting communes and ultimately established one himself. And he writes philosophically, "Our friends in the city, still fighting the good fight within the system, regard us as escapists. Instead of starting with war, exploitation, and imperialism, we begin at the center, ourselves, and work outward. The self needs a community." So do you want to talk a little bit about philosophy? You know, this wasn't the only perspective.
No, but I think there was a lot of political disillusionment in a post-1968, and I think, like Robert was saying, there was a certain subset of folks who'd been really politically active who thought, you know, if we can't necessarily affect the elections, well, what we can do is build new communities ourselves. And there was a book called Small is Beautiful that came out about that time that was really about escaping globalism and creating these small-scale local economies based on community. And that really resonated with the counterculture. And so there was this huge movement. I mean, it can be traced in census data from urban to rural areas as people tried to set out and create new communities.
I think that it's interesting to think about what attracts an author to a particular subject. So what drew you to chronicling hippie foods?
Well, I had been a restaurant critic for many years and a cook before that. And I had sort of focused on, you know, high-end food and then also in the Bay Area, little Vietnamese and Chinese and Ethiopian places. And it wasn't until I went to a vegetarian restaurant that had been around for 30 years and I had this meal of steamed vegetables with lemon tahini sauce and soy burgers, and I had this huge hit of nostalgia, and I realized, well, this is the food that I grew up with. And I sort of discounted it for many years. It wasn't what I wanted to eat. But I began also wondering, who came up with the neat loaf, you know? And and why did my family, who lived in a small town in Indiana, why were we eating that food in 1978? So that idea just kind of stuck around for a number of years until I was able to finally research it.
Well, this will be a walk down memory lane with Diet for a Small Planet and Moosewood Cookbook for some of us, certainly. And it's delightful to talk with you about it. Thanks for joining us, Jonathan.
Thanks for having me.
I've been talking with Jonathan Kaufman about his book titled Hippie Food, How Back to the Landers, Long Hairs, and Revolutionaries Changed the Way We Eat. You'll find more information at wvxu.org/aroundcincinnati. I'm Barbara Gray.
They must have grown you wild to make a grown man a child. I'll go and play in the mud to be with you, my spud. Potato, when you came out looking red as a beet, you had wrinkles on the bottoms of your feet. Oh, oh, now you are so sweet, potato. You're my sweet potato. You're my sweet potato. Dug you up. You come from underground. You smile, a smile, a little smile. The world is small. My little potato, you're my little potato, you're my little potato. They dug you up, you come from underground. You're my little potato, you're my little potato.